Hello there and welcome to The Monarchy here on Press TV with me, Samson Sees. We're back again, of course, even in the Easter holidays and during the Iranian New Year, Nowruz, to shed some light on the dark corners of that great Britain for you. This is indeed the sort of content that would not at all be broadcasted on mainstream media networks. It makes you wonder why. Coming up later in this episode, we'll be revisiting the controversial occupation in Iraq due to some uncovering documents that are just too important to ignore. And finally, we'll get to learn more about the sneakiness of the one and only BBC, BBC Persian in particular. So if that all sounds steaming hot, definitely stay with us. Now, if you were watching this programme a few weeks ago, we zoomed in on the former British Prime Minister Tony Blair regarding the 10-year anniversary of the controversial occupation in Iraq. And for yours truly, we happen to be revisiting the very same subject. We absolutely can't get away from this subject that millions of people around the world opposed, because more evidence about the US and the UK's unpopular occupation is actually being uncovered. Surely many of us know that these dark deeds have been carried out in the past. They cannot be buried forever, and they will not be forgotten, especially when the monarchy is watching, and you're watching. Enough said. Here's the story.
At this hour, American and coalition forces are in the early stages of military operations to disarm Iraq, to free its people, and to defend the world from grave danger.
Britain and US spying agencies had ignored intelligence before the invasion of Iraq that the country had no active weapons of mass destruction. According to the latest revelations, the MI6 and CIA had been told through secret channels by Saddam's foreign minister and his spy chief that Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction.
Scott Ritter, who was an inspector for UNSCOM, came out after the war and said that in his view, Iraq had been technically disarmed. Well, I don't think he had sufficient evidence to back it up. But what he meant was probably that, yes, we knew after the war that there were no nuclear weapons. There never were any. And moreover, that the nuclear infrastructure was gone.
This is while that former Prime Minister Tony Blair told Parliament in the run-up to the war that intelligence showed Iraq's nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons program was active, growing, and up and running.
It concludes that Iraq has chemical and biological weapons, that Saddam has continued to produce them, that he has existing and active military plans for the use of chemical and biological weapons, which could be activated within 45 minutes, including against his own Shia population, and that he is actively trying to acquire nuclear weapons capability.
The British and the US spying agencies were informed by top sources months before the invasion that Iraq had no active weapons of mass destruction program and that the information was not passed to subsequent inquiries. Evidences explain how Naji Sabri, Saddam's foreign minister, told the CIA station chief in Paris at the time, Bill Murray, through an intermediary that Iraq had virtually nothing in terms of weapons of mass destruction. Lord Butler, the former cabinet secretary who led an inquiry into the use of intelligence in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, has admitted that he was not told about Sabri's comments and that he should have been.
It's quite clear that there's plenty of evidence about, if anyone wants to find it, that in fact the evidence was distorted in order to build up the case for war, as Michael Lorry's letter shows, that in fact there was advice from the security services discussing the whole issue of oil security and how the question of oil was key to the war, to the discussions about the build-up and the war.
All this, as a decade-long inquiry circus about the illegal invasion of Iraq has not yet reached any promising outcome. Britain's Chilcot inquiry into the Iraq war lacks crucial documents. Chilcot has been demanding during the past 2 years that certain documents, including correspondence and notes of conversations between Blair and then US President George W. Bush, be declassified because those documents will provide important and often unique insights into Blair's thinking and the commitments he made to President Bush. But it was ordered by Sir Gus O'Donnell, the Cabinet Secretary, that these documents were to remain classified after consulting with Blair. Chilcot told O'Donnell in a letter back in January 2011 that publication of the memoirs and the refusal to disclose Blair's notes lead to the position that individuals may disclose privileged information without sanction, whilst a committee of privy councillors established by a former prime minister to review the issues cannot.
It is absolutely disgraceful that the current cabinet secretary should refuse to release letters sent by the then Prime Minister Blair to President Bush. If this inquiry is to mean everything or anything, every single paper must be released, must be made public, as Gordon Brown promised when this inquiry was established.
There are obviously significant people around in the security services, in the civil service more generally, who knew what was going on, who knew the politicians were lying, not just at the time, but every time they've spoken about it since. How come they haven't spoken out earlier? How come they didn't speak out when it mattered?
The Chilcot inquiry was established by former Labour Prime Minister Gordon Brown, who succeeded Tony Blair in 2007. The inquiry, headed by Sir John Chilcot, took evidence, mostly in public, from November 2009 to February 2011. Those appearing before it included Blair, other leading figures within the 1997 to 2010 Labour government, former cabinet secretaries and the military high command.
What we now need to realise is that every British citizen and every American citizen is responsible in law, recently passed war law, is responsible for what has gone on in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya. And therefore, we are, each of us, responsible in law for the deaths of men, women and children.
We've zoomed in on it many times before, and we're zooming in again. Here it is, the British Broadcasting Corporation, or better known as the BBC. It has certainly spread its logo across the media world with different faces, but why? Is it done simply to expand and advertise its brand? Or is there a special political scheme of some kind? Let's begin from its internal channels in Britain, such as BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Three, or even BBC News, etc. Outside of the UK, those channels cannot actually be viewed. Instead, alternative broadcasts like BBC World or BBC Parliament, in the English language, of course, are broadcasted on satellite links. Many of you may not know that there is even a BBC Persian in Farsi. Now, what sort of audience is that trying to manipulate? Surely not the people of Britain. Oh, no. This has to have been deliberately set up to target a specific country in the Middle East with political agendas. This has indeed been witnessed for quite some time by Iran, and the scenario is all here. Let's see the report.
A massive network of domestic and foreign-based spies working under journalists, reporters, and unofficial newsmakers, cover working mainly for the British Broadcasting Corporation, has recently been discovered and annihilated by the Iranian Intelligence Ministry. The massive media network, as identified by the Intelligence Ministry, is one of the largest media networks affiliated to the Global Arrogance, whose main task was to execute a new sedition ahead of the upcoming presidential and city councils elections on June the 14th in Iran. According to the Intelligence Minister, the BBC-affiliated network was being monitored by the Ministry for 1.5 years before a crackdown was launched in January to arrest its domestic agents after acquiring legal permissions from the judiciary. The Ministry said the main goal of the network was to exploit what they learned during the sedition period after the 2009 presidential election, which was incited by the West and its media apparatuses, particularly the BBC. The black history of the BBC Persian network is deep-rooted in recent Iranian history. BBC Persian Radio was launched on December the 29th, 1940, as the public relations and propaganda arm of the British Foreign Office in Iran. It stayed on radio waves in the Middle Eastern country for 50 years before it started its BBC Persian TV broadcasts in 2008. BBC Persian Radio, known in Iran as Radio London, was one of the first foreign language services of the British state broadcaster and began its work to counter Radio Berlin, which aired Persian broadcasts for Iranians during the First World War. The objective was clear: to blacken the name of the Germans, who were fighting allies, Britain, France and Russia, in Iran, to occupy the country and gain access to its strategic resources, as well as its railway and road transport during the war, through pretending that the Iranian government is inclined toward London's enemy, Germany. The BBC did its part of the plot, and Britons and Russians invaded Iran from the south and the north respectively, occupying the country under the pretext of helping Germany. The BBC hatched a similar plot in the early 1950s after the then Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh nationalized the Iranian oil industry, which was formerly dominated by Britain. Deprived of Iranian oil and outraged by Mossadegh marginalizing the then Iranian despot Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, and in turn the British who were his main backer, the British planned a coup d'etat in Iran. Once more, the broadcaster had a key role to play in the execution of the 1953 coup, dubbed Operation Ajax, which overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh and brought back the now deposed Iranian dictator to power. The BBC's damaging role did not stop at helping Allied forces occupy Iran, nor at helping return a despot to office in the country. It continued to the very present day. After the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979, BBC Persian turned to unprecedentedly distorted news about the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran, trying to persuade Iranians that the Islamic Republic was unable to tackle its problems. The British state broadcaster's enmity toward Iran once more took forms reminiscent of the 1953 coup in 2009, after the corporation turned to unconfirmed news sources to cover the presidential election in Iran, in direct contravention of its own code of ethics. The corporation had indeed made important preparations before sowing sedition in Iran that year.
He talked about Americans' role in the...
One of them was Mazyar Bahari, a Canadian-Iranian journalist who sent footage of attacks on a military base in Tehran. This is what he sent. Later, Iranian police released footage of the same incident, but from another angle.
On this side, we have a person who was supposed to be a journalist, but then we find out the person is doing things that a journalist is not supposed to do, which is, for example, take part in activities that are illegal in a country, and this person is in prison, and a report is basically created to show the audience of Press TV and make the audience of Press TV familiar with these type of activities that American and British media outlets engage in.
The British Foreign Office proposed the creation of the BBC Persian TV news channel 3 years earlier, and it was launched less than 6 months before Iran's 2009 presidential vote. The channel effectively replaced BBC Persian Radio as London's propaganda apparatus against Iran. The channel focused on the presidential election from the very onset and effectively waged a proxy war on Iran on behalf of the British Foreign Office, MI6 and Defense Ministry in the aftermath of the vote, better known as the 2008 sedition in Iran. The BBC's efforts are now well underway, though their impact is under serious doubt thanks to vigilance in Iran. BBC Persian is now focused on depicting Iran as miserable and undermines the Islamic system in the country, using what the corporation calls citizen journalism.
برای اون بخش رزومه کاری میفرستادی و پذیرفته میشدی یه بخش آموزش آنلاین بود که مثلا توی چند مرحله آموزش آنلاین داشت و مثلا آخر به سوالا جواب میدادی و میرفتی مرحله بعدی کسایی که اونجا فعال بودن ازشون دعوت شد که توی یه دوره آموزشی که توی استانبول برگزار میشد شرکت کنن از طریق ایمیل دعوت شد ازشون و بلیت و اعلام شد که هزینه سفر به عهده برگزار کننده است و بلیت هم از طریق ایمیل ارسال شد.
Given this history, it's no wonder that people in Iran, ordinary Iranian citizens, become quite worried when they see the British government is at it again. They are trying to, this time, use the profession of journalism to get to areas that they have no business getting into.
However, Iranian officials say the BBC has swapped journalists with spies, partly via the BBC World Service's Your Story section that trains ordinary citizens, offers them the needed equipment, and pays them to prepare reports from Iran. The BBC has always claimed objectivity and denied espionage, but evidence on the ground proves differently.
صریحا اعلام میکنم ما هیچ گونه همکاری در ایران به هیچ شکلی نداریم. بی بی سی اصلا با کسی در ایران در ارتباط نیست. اگرم با کسی صحبت میکنیم پخش میکنیم. اونها هم خبرنگاران مستقل هستن یا دانشگاهی هستن یا هر کسی دیگری هستن، ولی اینکه کسی برای ما کاری بخواد بکنه همچین چیزی وجود نداره.
Following the arrests and the hearing into the detainees' cases, director of the BBC World Service, Peter Horrocks, claimed earlier this month that Iran is following a security plot against the BBC staff, by which he meant the BBC Persian. Now a question mark hangs over Horrocks' comment. That is exactly who is hatching plots against whom, especially against the colourful background of BBC anti-Iranian conspiracies.
از این فناوری‌ها برای تهدید ملت‌های مستقل دارن استفاده می‌کنن و سیاست‌های استعماری قدیمی رو.
At the moment, they're using these technologies to threaten other nations and pursue their imperialistic policies. You can't threaten an entire nation with military action. Ironically, threats boost people's resolve to stand on their own two feet. That's why in independent countries, they try to work on people's minds. They want to create instability and anxiety in society so they can demolish it from within. This is the greatest disservice a media outlet can do.
فارسی هیچ نوع فعالیتی نمیتونه داشته باشه نظر قانونی و این قضیه باید پیگرد قانونی داشته باشه.
از لحاظ قانونی بخوایم حساب کنیم، بی بی سی نه فعالیتی داره تو ایران، نه اجازه کسبی داره که بخواد مثلا فعالیتی داشته باشه و باید پیگیری بشه به نظر من که ببینن که چه فعالیتی داشتن میکردن و قانونی هم باشون برخورد بشه.
Well, it looks as though we're seeing quite enough from the UK and those uncovering stories for this week. We hope you found it all useful and informative. But remember, if you wish to talk to us about anything to do with Britain, you can always message us by writing on our Facebook wall. That's UK Desk Press TV. Go ahead and add us. Or if you prefer, you could send us your emails via britain@presstv.ir. Oh, and just before we go, may I say that we are just currently several days into the Persian New Year. It's called Nowruz from its ancient calendar, lasting for 13 days, with celebrations taking place in Iran, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and about 20 other countries around the world. So on behalf of the team here, happy holidays, happy new year for 1392. Eid Shomoam Mubarak. Take care, see you next week.
someone. My lord, your time has come right between the eyes. Fell his master not by chance, away with pomp and circumstance. Come join our merry dance to the rhythm of goodbye. Farewell, the jewel crown. Farewell, the velvet gown. Watch you all come tumbling down. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the king of nothing really. Wave of a hand and a life of Riley. Pot Nazi, pot King Billy. Goodbye to the crown.